This episode of Out of Ink is sponsored by Pookie Presses. Pookie Presses are presses for lino, woodcut and wood engraving. They come in sizes A4, A3 and A2, and they are made in the UK.
They also come in a range of lovely colours, so you can pick one to fit your studio or workspace. To get your own with 5% off, use the code OUTOFINK, all lowercase. Hello and welcome to the Out of Ink podcast with myself, Bea Baranoska and Molly Lemon. This is a podcast where two anxious creatives talk openly and honestly about life as an artist.
Hello.
Hello.
We need to come at this episode with more positivity than we did last month.
Do you think?
Yeah, because I was thinking this morning when I woke up, what were we so miserable about last month? I can't actually remember, which just sums life up, doesn't it?
The months, they all blend into one for me.
Yeah? Just one long month, yeah. Your whole life.
Yeah. Especially at the moment, because we're supposedly in the UK moving into spring, but it is so cold at the moment.
I know. Sam just said, come sit outside and have some lunch. I sat outside and I was like, well, this is unpleasant because I'm just cold. Like, what is this? I'm going to go back inside.
It was confusing today because it's sunny but absolutely bitterly cold. Yeah.
Bitterly cold, yeah.
How was your Easter?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it was good. I actually relaxed a bit, which was lovely.
Well done.
I needed that. Yeah, how was yours?
My Easter was so indulgent. But Molly has rubbed off on me with her with her binge eating. Because I used to be really restrained. Yeah. And then I met Molly and now I see an Easter egg and I'm like, I've just got to eat it. Like, today I'm wearing my maternity leggings.
Lovely. Just because... Comfort is key.
Yeah.
When I was round your house, like, I don't know when it would have been, February.
You're going to talk about the cream egg.
Yeah, so as we've mentioned before, Bea has a chocoman in her house, which is like a footstool with full of chocolate. Well, two of them actually, because it overspills. Anyway, so I feel like rude asking for like fresh chocolate because I'm quite a polite person. So there was an aged cream egg.
Just for context, it predates my child. Probably at least 1.5 years old.
I think it was 2 years because it would have been the Easter before he arrived.
2-year-old cream egg.
So I was really happy to have this cream egg because I love any chocolate, whether it's in date or not. But I bit into it and it had like gone a really like foamy consistency. The middle was meant to be gooey and it wasn't solid.
It wasn't creamy, was it? It was anything but.
I really did appreciate you sharing it with me though. But
okay, well, when you come round next, we've got a fresh box of cream eggs now. You can have one of those.
No, it's okay. I'll stick with the old ones, thanks.
You want to wait until 2026?
Yeah, let them mellow a bit. I must apologise if you can hear it now. My neighbour is gardening and the dog's barking. So just, if you can hear anything, I can't do anything about it. But it's just a little bit of ambiance, you know. It's nice,
background, isn't it? Background noise.
Yeah, a bit of a dose of reality.
Well, I have to congratulate you this week.
Why?
Because you won the anxiety scale. You've been moaning all year about the fact you haven't won. Also, I checked on your behalf, and your mum, she voted for you this week, so there we go. I thought she was going to stay on my side, but you deserved a win.
I thought... When I looked at them, yeah. I think people would have guessed that you would have chosen Childhood Toys and I would have done Car Sweets.
So you still think people voted for me?
No, I just think if people were to guess, I don't have Car Sweets in my life, so I can't be trusted.
Oh, Car Sweets are the best thing about getting in the car.
I know, because I have no self-control. I have to finish a packet. There would just be empty packets. There would never
but
be anything
I have
in
to
there.
Say, I think on this occasion, your scale was better. So well done on your win.
Thank you. I feel like we've jumped well quickly into this and I'm not prepared because, as I said to you before we started recording, I'm still writing my anxiety scale. So please, can you go first while I have a thing?
Oh, okay. I was going to say you could go back to a bit more fodder if you felt.
No,
okay.
We'll add fodder in at the end.
Okay. My anxiety scale. childhood toys. So number 10, Lovely Day, we have Yellow the teddy bear. My favourite bear of all time. I took him everywhere. There was never a trip that he didn't come on. He was in my bed every single night. Like, I couldn't sleep without him. He was my absolute treasure.
Where does he live now?
Guess what colour he is.
Well, I've seen pictures of him and I know he's got really weird feet.
I've got a fun fact, actually. So, yes, Yellow the bear is yellow. But because I took him everywhere and he got so threadbare, my mum used to occasionally have to, like, sew new fabric on him so he didn't have so many holes. And once she ran out of yellow fabric and he spent a couple of years of his life being blue.
Oh, really?
But was still called yellow. And answer to your previous question, he lives in my wardrobe.
Oh, well, that's a bit sad. So you closed the door on him?
Yeah.
How dare you?
He lives, you know, so he's got a good view when the wardrobe door is open.
He has 2 minutes a day of daylight and then...
Not even that. I don't have time to get fresh clothes out of my wardrobe. I just put on the clothes that are on the floor.
Same.
Okay, so...
Also means you don't have to do so much washing. It's just a win-win.
All the washing in my house is baby clothes. There's no room for my clothes.
No.
Okay, so that's number 10. Lovely. And then number one. Gosh, this brought back some memories. This toy was the source of all of my childhood nightmares and worries. And it was this, I feel like it was one of those toys you get in a McDonald's. It was that level, just like a plastic toy. And it was from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And it was this little plastic doll that you could twist. And one half of its torso was Snow White. And then you twisted it. And the other half was the Wicked Witch.
I feel like I can picture this.
Yeah. And I was so scared of the Wicked Witch or Evil Queen or whatever she was. That I used to, whenever I found that toy in my box, I used to hide it. I was like, I can't, I don't want it. I can't see it.
Should have given it away.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. Honestly, so many nightmares about this horrible toy. So that's my number one.
It does sound really creepy.
Yeah, really creepy. In fact,
some children's toys are just really weird, aren't they?
When I was thinking about the scale, and I couldn't remember what she was called, if she was an evil queen or a witch, so I googled Snow White villain, and I could barely look at the pictures of her. Like, is that deep? Is that deep in my soul? So that's one. And then number... Oh, no. I won't say the number. I'll say the toy.
Oh, yeah. Good save.
Yeah, thanks. A Furby. I had several Furbies, and my main memory of them is that they smelt really good. And I know that's weird, but when I think...
That is really weird.
And I really liked that they used to go, ooh, when you were putting them to sleep. And when you put your finger in their mouth to feed them, and I can't remember the noise they made, but they made a very cute nibbly noise.
This is funny because Furby is on my list. I have a long list. I'm going to assign numbers to them in a second.
Oh, wow.
But Furby was on there, and it could have been a number 10 because I was like, what does it even do? You have just reminded me what it does, but still, it's lacking, isn't
it? Did you have more than one? Because one of the best things about Furbies was if you had two and you put them to face each other and they could interact.
Oh, their feet. Feels like you're showing off about how many Furbies you had, though.
No, I had one brand new one who smelled amazing. Yeah. And then I had one charity shop one who have no good memories of that one. But
I had mini Furbies. They were like a quarter of the size. And I think I got them in McDonald's or something. And you could click their feet together.
Doesn't sound as good, I'm afraid. But yeah, I quite liked a Furby.
Yeah. I'm going to say then a 4.
I put it at a 5, which is optimistic. But I thought we've been so down on the anxiety scale. We've got to be higher than a 3.
Yeah, you've reassessed the scale.
Yeah, so 5 for Furbies. Lovely, I enjoyed that scale. Thank you for that.
Good. I am going to make mine up right now. So, number 10, best childhood toy I ever had is going to be a doll's house. I had a lovely doll's house. And it lived in the shed, and I used to go out there and...
Why did it live in the shed?
Because it was like a play shed.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't know, my parents probably just wanted a bit of peace and quiet. I spent all my time in the shed. And it had... I think it was like an old one that my parents had revamped, but it had like wallpaper bricks and stuff, and it had all been done really nicely. And at the very beginning of when I got the doll's house, there were little lamps that lit up. It was all wired
in. Oh, that's amazing. Does it still exist?
Yeah, I think it does. But it literally was only lit up for maybe a week before the mice got to it and bit all the cables. Well, so I barely have memories of the actual lights working.
Also, who lived in it? Did you have Sylvanians or did you have like dolls? Or did you not need anyone to live in it?
I always wanted a Sylvanian and I never got one.
Oh my god, Sylvanian. If I had not had a teddy bear, my favourite teddy bear, Sylvanians would have been 10 on my list.
I think I had like mini people. I can't remember. It was really about rearranging the furniture and all the little food.
You know,
the little plastic food. And getting new furniture for my doll's house was like the most exciting thing ever.
I so agree with you. It's really delightful. It's like the best. And also you'd go through phases where you'd be like, right, they need a new living room now. And you just rearrange it.
Yeah.
Best day ever.
It was delightful. I think I always put my people through a bit of turmoil. It was always some drama going on, but the feng shui was perfect.
Oh, well, that's fine then. They forgive you.
And number one, worst, most anxious day ever. Mm. Oh, I should have put a Rubik's Cube at number 10, shouldn't I?
That's not your favourite childhood toy. No, it's your favourite now toy.
Absolutely brilliant at Rubik's Cube. Number one, I'm going to put... Yeah. What's her face?
I'm sorry, you're going to need to expand on that.
It's like a Barbie, but she didn't have a face.
What?
She was just blank.
No face?
And she came with like this kind of gimp mask you put over her face, and then you could stamp her eyes on and her lips on, and you could change her lips and wipe it off. But I ran out of the wipeable pen, so I just did it permanent and it looked terrible.
What is this? Can you find out what this is called?
What's her face?
That's actually what it's called.
It's called What's Her Face.
Google it. I'm sorry.
Google it now. I need your reaction.
I need to Google it. Sorry, listeners.
So my friend had one, and then I obviously needed one because my friend had one. And then we were playing with it and ran over it with a scooter.
Oh, Molly, this is absolutely terrifying. like horrible.
I know. So I loved it at the time, but looking back, horrific childhood toy. I know, but have you seen the pink mask with the petals around it that you put on her face to put the stamps on? Because that's the scariest bit.
I just don't really like seeing them like this. Like, horrible. No.
I used to love playing with it, though. It was, to be fair, it should have been number 10, best toy ever, but looking back, horrible.
Oh, so that's just quite scary.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go through your whole list. I thought you had 10 toys down there.
Oh, no, I just couldn't remember my childhood. So I was trying to remember, and then I Googled toys. I just haven't thought about childhood toys in ages. So I was trying to reflect, and then I put them all down, and I'm picking out best, worst, and then whatever I am.
Okay, so what are you today? No number, please.
Today? No number. Today, I am an electric shock lie detector. You put your hand on it, and it had a little strap, and then you ask people questions.
I don't think I had one of those. How effective was it at catching liars?
It had different grades. Oh, it was always a surprise because, yeah, it wasn't that effective, to be fair. Maybe it was just on random.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That doesn't sound that great to me. I'd probably say, oh, what's that fancy drink you're drinking?
Oh, it's kombucha. But not Sam's. He's given up because we nearly died.
Yeah.
So now we buy them in cans.
I'm very pleased about that. Sorry, it just looks so fancy. Right. Lie detector. 4.
3.
Oh. Yeah.
Because I hate electric shocks. And, like, I had it. First of all, I didn't really have friends over very much. So, like, who was I going to play with? Just ask myself questions. And also, I hate electric shocks, so I always was pulling my hand off before it could do anything anyway.
It can't have been that much of an electric shock, right? Because it's a children's toy.
But I don't even like a static shock off the car. Mm. Like, that's one of my things I just hate is electric shocks.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very pleasant. I wouldn't want that.
It should have really sat down there with What's Her Face, to be fair, but... I can't be dramatic and say I'm a 2, so I'll be a 3.
Oh, that is still quite anxious.
I feel like... You're having to look at me and you can see I'm in a bit of a... Like, physically, not doing great today, am I? Look at me.
Look at me!
No, you look great. I look greasy and pale and just, like, a bit...
Well, I think I got maximum 3 hours sleep last night, so I am running on...
And not 3 hours in a row either.
No. Bad night.
Bad night. And I've now got a slight addiction to sleeping tablets, so there we go. Insomnia's back.
Oh no, that's not good, is it?
I literally said to you last week, my insomnia's not too bad at the moment.
You did. But it does flare up at anxious times.
It's a perpetual cycle of awfulness.
It's okay, we'll go away again soon.
Yeah.
Gotta believe that.
Hopefully.
Stay positive.
Anyway, let's get into this month's topic. I feel like we're getting good at remembering it's month, not week. Perfectionism.
Out of 10, how much of a perfectionist are you?
9. Well, what are you on the scale of perfectionism?
7. 6, 7. It depends. I really am quite... I'm better these days at letting things go.
That's very positive. Well, maybe you'll actually have some advice, because I was going to say, I don't feel very well-versed as someone that struggles with perfectionism.
Should we just go straight into the questions, or do you want to have a little chat about what perfectionism means to you?
Yeah, that sounds fun. What does perfectionism mean to you?
Oh, just stop throwing my questions back at me. Perfectionism to me means being a bit OCD about okay. things. Possibly doing a drawing, spending ages on a drawing, finishing it, and then being like, no, it's not done, it can't be done. And sort of revisiting it over and over and over again, and adding tiny, teeny, tiny brush strokes each time. Not really changing it much at all, but thinking, no, it's not perfect, and going back to it. And actually, had I just left it where it was, my life would have been okay. I think that is what perfectionism means to me.
Okay. So people used to say to me, like, on social media, you're such a perfectionist. And I'd always reply, like, no, I'm not. What are you on about? I'm releasing work that is not perfect, therefore I can't be a perfectionist because I've released it anyway. But I realised for me, being a perfectionist is striving for perfection. And obviously I can't reach it because I don't know if you can as an artist. But berating myself and never being happy. So I release it anyway. Like, I don't necessarily go back and change things lots of times to make it perfect, but I will just always, like, berate myself that it's not perfect.
Yeah, and then there's the question, like, what does perfect even mean? Because how are you able to be the judge of what's perfect and what's not? I don't think you are.
I think you can with, like, something where there is a correct answer.
Yeah, 2 times 2.
Yeah, but you can't with anything else, like, how you look, what you create, how you are, and what you think. Like, that's all subjective.
Yeah.
So that's the whole problem. Striving for something that doesn't exist is just like a fool's game, isn't it?
Yeah, see, I don't think there is such a thing as the perfect piece of art, because it's so subjective. And what you might release a piece of art and think, oh, it's not finished, or this print edition isn't good enough, but to someone else it might be their absolute favorite piece of art in their house, and they think it's absolutely perfect. I don't think it's something you can judge, really.
And you can't judge your own work because you see it differently to other people, so you'll always, like, I think anyway, most artists put, like, a bad spin on everything. Like, if you made something, I'd look at it and go, oh my god, that's so good. But if I made something, I'd be like, well, it could have been better.
Yeah.
Like, I always come from a really negative place for my own work, so how are you meant to judge it?
I agree with that. Interesting. Should we go into
the questions?
Let's. Question number 1. How does perfectionism hinder your progress and creativity?
How does perfectionism... I was just going to repeat it back at you, but I couldn't talk.
Wow.
Oh, God. What do you think? That would be easier than just repeating the whole question back at you, wouldn't it?
Is this episode going to just be me asking you questions and then you turning them back at me?
I feel really depleted. I have nothing to give.
Yes, I think it probably, if you put a lot of worth on something having to be perfect, then yeah, it's going to hinder your progress and your creativity, probably, because can anything ever be perfect? I think if you can let go of it and have the piece of art for what it is, that's going to be much better for your creativity. But it depends on what perfectionism means to the individual, I think.
I think, because I'm always trying to make what I make perfect, because I do think that's what I'm striving for, even though I know I can't reach it. hang on, brain.
But maybe, surely a perfect piece of art isn't actually that creative. There's an argument there, because if it's perfect, has enough experimentation gone into it? Like, have you pushed yourself enough out of your comfort zone? If it's perfect, maybe it's not pushing any boundaries, and therefore it's imperfect.
So you mean it's like there's no mistakes, it's inoffensive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel...
But then is that perfect?
Yeah, because if you set out to draw the perfect landscape, are you saying that every single tree has to be like the exact shape, width, colour, scale? Whereas actually if you just set out to draw a landscape that you really enjoy creating and get lots of kind of creativity and pleasure out of creating that piece of art, is that perfect? Is that more perfect than the perfect, like, representation of the landscape?
I was just thinking, how many times are we going to use the word perfect?
I think today? I've lost my mind.
And I've been trying to grapple with what I was trying to say, and I can't really remember.
Should we host a competition to guess how many times we said perfect?
Yeah, let's do it.
They can win an enamel pin.
I really do need to try and respond to this question.
Yeah, because we've got a few questions to cover here.
I think, because I'm always trying to get everything perfect in my work so that I feel good enough, it means that there's like fear there of getting things wrong. Like if I make a bad artwork, for me it means that I'm no good. And then that's like it's not just a bad artwork then, it's like I'm a bad artist. When I make work, I guess there's a bit of fear there that I'll prove to myself I'm no good. So if there's fear there, it stops you from doing things, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And for me, perfectionism is not just the piece of art itself. It's like I want it to be printed perfectly. I wanted it to be packaged perfectly. I want it to arrive in perfect condition. I want someone to get it out and be like, oh, this is perfect, you know? It's the whole process. The whole process needs to be perfect, not just the art itself.
God, yeah. In fact, I think the packaging and the whole postal thing for me is way more important than the artwork.
Oh, no.
Everything's got to be perfect. That's why I sit there. I cut all the mounts and then I go through them. Well, I check the mount board before I cut it for any blemishes. And then once I cut it, I check it again. And then I mount and I check it again.
It was an absolute nightmare. Never again.
God. Stressful.
Yeah. Okay, I think we need to move on to question two, or this might be a 5-hour podcast.
Yeah, well, it took me so long to get my words out that time.
Okay. How do you allow yourself not to make perfect work, but still make good art? I think this is about experimentation and about not being afraid to try new things. You're really inspiring me with this podcast, because Molly is sat and behind her head, she's got these massive, her like enormous canvas that she painted in Devon, which
it's actually flimsy paper, which is upsetting, because no matter how perfect the painting could be, the paper is still crap.
But I believe you have released your YouTube video when this podcast. Okay, yes, you can go and watch the podcast video about this giant landscape when you're listening to this.
Thanks.
But it's really inspiring me, because I'm looking at it and it's so different to Molly's engravings, and it's so bold, and the markings are just like, obviously you were just like, I'm just going with it, I'm just drawing what I see and enjoying the process. So I think that possibly is a great way to make to like let go, and you've still made something really, really beautiful, but it's not like perfect, because it's not like the standard of your normal wood engravings, is it, where you spend hours and hours and hours engraving.
Yeah,
so you've inspired me.
Oh, I'm glad. The thing about the big painting behind me that you guys can't see is that it was so far from what I normally do. So it was huge instead of really small and intricate. And it was painting with big paintbrushes, and I used chisels. So it was like, it was so different. So that if I failed at it, and I'm using the word fail, like not actually fail.
Yeah.
It wouldn't mean as much, because, oh, I'm just new at this. I'm just practicing. I'm just experimenting. It's just something I'm doing on top of my normal work.
Yeah.
And that took the pressure off for me. Whereas if it was something to do with wood engraving or printmaking, there would have been like a bigger weight on me than to do something perfect.
Yeah, you weren't looking, there was no sort of end goal other than just enjoying the sort of process. So I think that is a good way to go into a piece of work thinking it doesn't have to be perfect, but I just want to enjoy experimenting and like still end the process with the piece of art you're proud with.
Yeah, and it's like what we were saying last month, is like you'll make so many artworks in your lifetime and like maybe 9 in 10 are not good, but the one that is good wouldn't have been as good as it was if you hadn't done the other 9.
Yeah, all the practice and experimentation.
Yeah, so you just have to accept that along the way there'll be a lot of imperfections to get to a place that you're happy with.
Mm.
But you won't ever reach perfection with it.
No. Right, next question. How do you feel about finished, not perfect, the phrase? I've never heard of this phrase before, have you?
No, it's a good phrase.
Again, I think it's about letting go of something having to be the best thing you've ever done and just accepting that that piece of artwork at the time, that particular piece of artwork is finished, or you don't have, you don't want to dedicate any more time to it, and being able to move on from it and seeing it for what it is, rather than thinking, oh, and that has to be more perfect than what it currently is.
And it is always hard to know when to finish, and like that's part of being an artist, isn't it? Is to know when to stop working on something.
Yeah. You can almost see the cogs in your brain, like
I feel like, I don't know if it's because of the sleeping tablet that's just ruined my brain today. I just don't feel like, normally I feel like there's things going on up there, like I am thinking. But today, I'm looking up to, into my brain, and it's just blank.
Oh, wow.
So that's what's happening.
Let's just move on to the next question, because we've got a few to get through. And I just can't.
I'm just really hoping that something will come to me at some point.
That didn't require more of an answer. Let's move on.
Okay, thanks.
Have you noticed a tendency to greater perfectionism in particular circumstances? Ooh, I'm going to answer this one, because I think, yes, I want things to be more perfect for, like, for example, I've been working on a project, like an illustration for someone else, and to me, that needs to be more perfect, possibly, than my other work, because it's being held, in my eyes anyway, it's being held to higher standard because it's being judged by other people. And when you're just making art and you're the only judge, it's easier to let go because, you know, you can allow yourself to think that piece of work is finished. But when you're creating something that someone's paying for and someone's, like, trusting you to create a vision that they have given to you, I think that's a lot harder to let go of the perfectionism there.
I think for me, whether it's packing orders or making artwork or whatever, I'm way more likely to be hung up on perfectionism if I'm tired and stressed, because everything will seem a little bit worse. So print that, you know, I took it off the press. This happened the other day. I took it off the press and I was like, it's good enough. I'm going on holiday tomorrow. It's gonna do.
Yeah.
I move on. Like, I was in an okay mood. I got back. I was like, well, that's terrible. Hack away at the block for an hour, print it.
No.
That's even worse. And it was because I was really anxious. And therefore, I'm way more caught up in that bubble of perfectionism. And then I'm talking more negatively to myself.
Yeah.
About I'm not good enough. That's not good enough. Nothing's good enough. And then, like, it just gets so much worse. Whereas if I'm in a good mood, I'm a bit easier on myself and therefore less of a perfectionist.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So for me, it's like about how I feel rather than necessarily what circumstance I'm in, like what I'm doing.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, what are the best and worst things about being a perfectionist? Surely the best thing about being a perfectionist is pushing yourself to high standards. Like, that's also a bad thing. But I think always striving to be better is positive in general.
And what's the worst thing?
It's the same thing. The worst thing is holding yourself to such high standards that you feel like you can never meet, and therefore always feeling like you failed.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Perfectionism is, like, really at the heart of OCD, which is what I have. So, like, perfectionism is really powerful in doing your best, and, like, motivation. Like, it gives me motivation every day to strive to create perfect work or do things perfectly. But you just have to remember that it's a marker that you will never reach, but you are going towards it. In OCD, there's maladaptive perfectionism, which is, like, you just get stuck trying to be perfect. And then it just creates all these bad things. And for me, perfectionism can be like quite scary. Like, what am I trying to say?
No, I know what you're trying to say. Trying to be too perfect is scary because it's impossible. Because you can always raise your own standards of perfectionism. So you can reach one standard that you once thought was perfect. But if you're constantly striving to be better, that still won't be enough. You bash that away and then just keep moving the boundaries for perfectionism.
Yeah, so you're right. Like, the worst thing for me as well is, like, feeling not good enough the whole time because the marker we've set ourselves, we can't achieve. Mm. So therefore, you're always falling short.
Yeah. Right. What are you a perfectionist about, Ari, your art slash business, that you didn't expect to be a perfectionist about? Deep pondering pause. This makes for really good listening, I think.
Well, there's just so much. I didn't expect I'd need to weigh all my parcels 10 times. I didn't expect I'd need to look at all the mount board and find little bits of black in it. I didn't expect that I'd never be happy with any artwork I ever made.
I didn't expect to care so much about packaging. Like, because it seems quite minor, doesn't it? But actually, I feel like it's really important because it's the first thing people see when they get their parcel.
Yeah. I think also coming across to other people, like, am I coming across right? Am I who they want me to be? Am I who they think I am?
Yeah.
Like, all that, like, every time you put an Instagram post out, is this representing who I am or who I should be? And, like, now when I'm editing videos, am I breathing too loud? Are they annoyed with my breathing? Like, there's so much that I fixate on.
No.
Like, is this a bad angle? It kind of goes into everything.
God, there's a whole sub-genre here on perfectionism and Instagram. That's a whole nother wormhole you just opened up there. Perfectionism and social media. Because I feel like the problem is sometimes you can see other artists and you feel like they come across as so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, maybe they're not.
Yeah. Well, they're not. No one is.
No, but I feel like that's the problem, isn't it? We're comparing ourselves to someone's perfect vision of themselves that they're putting online.
It's really hard. And then also, there's all the things you think. So, things people can't see. So, if I see a post on Instagram and I feel jealous of that person, then I'm thinking, I shouldn't be having those feelings. Like, if I was a perfect person, I'd just be happy for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then
a
it's like...
perfect person.
It's even things people can't see that you hold yourself to such a high standard because, you know what people think you should be rather than just... you're just a normal human with flaws and bad thoughts.
Yeah, and everyone's the same.
Although some people are more perfect than others.
No, that's your brain talking. I don't think that's true. Right, anyway. What perfectionism coping mechanisms do you find helpful? Do we have any coping mechanisms?
I need some more. Please send them.
Could you maybe just send in suggestions?
I did mean to look through my therapy book for this, actually.
Yeah.
I'm sure there would have been something in there, but I don't know where that went. I think taking a step back and getting a bit of perspective rather than just like getting more and more worked up about something is really helpful. And also, if it's about creating artwork, go and find some artwork you made 10 years ago and you'll see an improvement.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good suggestion.
And then also remember that if you make artwork that isn't perfect, that's all artwork, but that's when you learn. So say you've done something and it hasn't quite gone right, then see what hasn't gone right and try and remember that for next time.
Hmm.
Look at it as a learning opportunity.
Your brain's awoken.
Thank God for that. Yeah. Only took 30-something minutes.
38 minutes, 22 seconds. Not bad.
No, it won't be, because the amount of silence there has been of us just not talking and thinking will be like 25 minutes in at this point.
Right.
Did we answer that? You didn't answer
I
that.
Just no, second you what you that. Say. No, because... I don't know. I don't know if I have any coping mechanisms. I don't think I struggle with holding myself to perfect standards. And I don't know if that means that I'm not good enough. Maybe I should be striving for more. And so that's worrying me slightly. I don't I do want things to be perfect, but I am quite good at letting go of things.
Mm. Yes, how did you get there? How are you like that?
I don't know. My work is very different, though, because if I, let's say, for argument's sake, that I'm trying to draw an animal and I want it to be really anatomically correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I draw something and I'm like, no, that's not right. I can just rub it out, which I know you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So I can erase my imperfections and then make it perfect. So I... Oh, there's someone at the door.
Have you got to get it?
It might be... I think it might be my tubes. Sorry.
Oh, exciting.
I'm coming back. Sorry.
Was it the...
big box tubes? Of tubes. Yeah.
That would have been a really big box. How many tubes have you ordered?
Really big box. Like 200, I think.
200? How's the hallway? How's it even in the hallway?
They're only A2 size.
Okay. But you've got a very exciting project. You can probably announce next.
Yeah, month. Next time. Next time.
See what all those 200 tubes are for.
And not all for that. I just, they were cheaper to buy at that thing. Okay. But yeah, they are all for that. I don't... what was I saying? Oh, being able to erase a mistake. But then it's still never going to be perfect because I'm still illustrating something. It's still an illustration. I can't remember my point. It's gone.
If you have a little bit of self-compassion and you can be like, well, that's turned out okay. I tried hard and I'm relatively happy with that.
Yeah.
Then you can move on and just move on to the next thing. If you don't have any self-compassion... or you're lacking in it, then you'd be stuck on that being like, we should have done better. Could be better though, couldn't it? Should have tried harder. And then that, all that like niggles at you. And if you're able to give yourself a bit of self-compassion, like it sounds like you are, then that's why you're probably not being stuck so much with perfectionism.
Yeah.
Like you feel it, but you're like, but I tried my best. It's starting to rain now, which is causing more issues with the noise in
it. No, I can't hear anything.
Let's just cut out my audio this time. It's no good anyway.
It's really sunny here.
Wow. Lucky you.
Let us move on.
Okay.
How do you keep perfectionism under control when you have a deadline?
I spend half my day worrying about if things are perfect, but just work really, really long days to get things done on time.
Yeah, I don't think people should go with that. People shouldn't take that advice. We should do an episode on overworking. We should add that to the top of it.
Yeah, but we did burnout, didn't we?
Yeah. It's obviously not. It's not gone in.
I literally don't feel qualified to answer anything because I struggle so much with everything.
No, but it's not about giving people the perfect answers. It's about having a discussion that people can relate to.
Or yeah, just telling people that you're as stressed and wound up as them.
I think when you have a deadline, you do tend to allow yourself to let go of perfectionism somewhat because you have to meet that deadline. That's what I think anyway, personally. If I have to finish a project, I physically don't have the time to faff about thinking, that's not quite perfect. Because at some point, you've got to send it, haven't you? You've got to let go and say, okay, it's done. So I think maybe if you're struggling, going back to a previous question, maybe if you're really struggling with perfectionism in your own work, maybe you should try that. Maybe you should try setting a deadline and saying, I'm only going to spend one more hour on this piece of work and then it's done. And then you can't, you've taken the option away from yourself of spending loads and loads of time faffing over making it perfect.
That is good. I like that. It's now hailing though.
I can't hear it.
I know, but you will be able to in the audio. Maybe if I just shut
the
blind.
I love the sound of rain. That's fun. We'll all enjoy that.
Well, I'm just sat in the dark now. Oh, it's like winter all over again. It's like when we used to do evening records before your studio was next to a nursery.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't have evenings anymore. I go to bed at 8 p.m. Which I somehow tricked my body into being totally fine with.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
No, I know. I wouldn't have thought I could either. But now, it's 8:05, I'm very upset if I'm not in bed.
Do we need to try and just give a last few thoughts on perfectionism?
We do.
And we really need to pull something out of our brains.
Let's do that. I think perfectionism doesn't exist. It's a concept, for sure. Mm. But if you're such a perfectionist, I don't think you're ever going to reach your own level, your own goals that you set yourself, because they're always going to move. They can always be more perfect. I think it's more about letting go a bit and just enjoying the process and being okay with something possibly not being perfect.
Mm, I agree. I think being perfect is often linked to how you feel others are perceiving you, like trying to be perfect for others, in front of others. So try and bring it back to you a bit and like do things for you. See the learning in it and like the growth, and try not to think about what others are thinking, because they're probably not thinking anything. They're not going to be thinking, what a crap artwork when you post it online like you think they are.
No.
They're probably admiring it, and don't put too much weight on what others think of you.
Mm, good advice.
I'll follow it one day.
I was messaging someone on Instagram the other day about, it was about failure, and I said, oh, you should listen to the failure episode of the podcast, and then realised I never take my own advice. And I thought I should go back and listen to that, because I felt a bit like a failure.
When did we do that?
Don't know.
Long time ago.
Yeah, a while ago.
Long time ago.
Anyway, it's out there if you feel like you need a bit of a boost.
Hmm. Well, that's the thing, isn't it, with anything? Like, you might know what's the right thing to do, but actually doing it in the moment you need to do it is another thing, isn't it?
Hmm.
It's very hard to do.
It is.
Should we talk about Barbie?
I was just going to say, well, Barbie is sort of about perfectionism. It ties in quite well.
And childhood toys.
I was telling Molly, by the way, if anyone else had one of these types of Barbies, please message the pod account, because Molly had never heard of it. I had a Barbie whose stomach was fleshy. So you like poked it and it actually felt like flesh. But it was a legit Barbie, but she's looking at me and she's giving me the same expression as she did when I told her. She's like, that's not a thing. But it was.
Was it only the stomach?
Yes.
For like people that really like to press stomachs?
Yes, only the stomach.
Are you sure there wasn't meant to be a baby in there?
No. And she came in a crop top and leggings so that her stomach was out, so you could really enjoy the texture of her stomach.
I'm going to Google it, hang on.
Anyway.
Fleshy Barbie. Stomach Barbie.
Oh, I'm going to have to find it, aren't I?
Oh yeah, were her leggings like blue? All I'm getting are pregnant Barbies here.
No, just have to believe me that she existed, okay? And she was my favourite.
There's even a blurred out picture here that says like explicit content, don't click. So don't Google this, because apparently bad things come up. I think it's the word fleshy. Nothing good ever comes with the word fleshy,
no,
does it?
No, it doesn't. Anyway, yeah, we had...
So you've made that up?
No. I loved her. I'll find her in my parents' house and I'll bring her to your house.
I think there was a baby in there and you never found it.
No, you couldn't open her stomach. It was just nice to touch. Central.
Central?
Sensual. A sensual Barbie.
I mean, it was central on her body, but sensual to touch.
Okay. Anyway.
We'll move on. That's a bit weird.
We had a lovely Barbie night. I mean, it was supposed to be a movie night, but there was drama in the Baranoska household. And
well, I feel like you had a sixth sense, because on like the Tuesday or Wednesday, I was like, so you'll come stay Saturday? And you were like, yeah, unless one of us gets ill.
No, but that...
And I was like, okay.
The thing you have to understand about having a one-year-old is every other day he gets ill.
Yeah, but he hadn't been ill for a few weeks, so I thought it was a bit rude of him to choose that day.
It was really bad timing.
Yeah, I know.
It was like the universe just didn't want us to meet up and watch Barbie. Several things happened on that day that were saying to me, no, this isn't supposed to happen today. But it did happen. It was more of a movie afternoon. And when I got there, Molly was so stressed about timing, she wrote a time schedule sheet.
Well, I knew we had limited time, so I said, when are you leaving? We'll work backwards.
It was smart.
So I planned it.
And we decided, Molly decided ages ago, we would only eat pink food on this day.
Yeah.
We ate so much pink food, we both physically felt unwell.
It was so bad. I literally, like, I was in so much pain.
Molly made me milk jelly, which I'd never, ever had. And it's honestly my new favourite thing. I made it the next day when I came home. And I made such a huge bowl, I've been eating it every day for pudding.
I had it for breakfast this morning.
I love it. I can't believe I've never had it. Mm.
It's condensed. Is it condensed? Evaporated milk. Evaporated milk and jelly.
Yeah, but it's so much better than jelly. Just jelly.
I love both. But my mum always used to make
Adam
it.
Said, is it blancmange? But we looked it up and I think blancmange has got added sugar. But yeah. Otherwise, maybe it kind of is blancmange. Mm. Very 70s.
Oh, very, very. No, it was fun, wasn't it?
Very fun. I liked the film a lot.
Yeah, so basically when Barbie came out in the cinemas, you were like still in like new mum phase.
Yeah, Molly went without me and I was really offended because I was like, I could come, you know. I'd be tired.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't. There's no way you'd come.
I reckon I could have come. When did it come out? I'm looking up when it came out.
You would have got back home at 11 and that would have just span you out. Anyway, so I was like, we need to have a Barbie night in the future. Hence why it happened.
I think we tried to organise it in October. You were going to come here and that failed. So then, yeah. So really, it has taken us a long time to schedule this event.
Well, I wanted it to be like a slumber party vibe, you know, with all the pink food. But we did still get that vibe.
We did.
It just was a shortened version.
Yeah.
And then you left at 7:30. What was it, about 7:30?
Yeah.
And then you were like, when you voice hit me when you were back, you were like, I haven't been out this late in ages.
Yeah, I was driving through Bath on my way home, like looking at everyone having a nightlife. Not even a nightlife, just a late afternoon life. And thinking, I haven't been outside at this time of day in months.
Yeah. In a year.
So it was very nice, very enjoyable. But we're going to do it again and actually do a movie night. Like, when the baby's not sick. So, you know, 2030.
Yeah. Sounds good. I'll put it in the diary.
But, yeah, very nice. Very fun times. Oh, we have to celebrate, actually. We recently reached over 1,000 followers on our Out of Vogue
Instagram. Oh, yeah, we did.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
To all our lovely followers and listeners.
Mm.
If you didn't know, we are on Instagram and you can follow us at Out of Ink Pod. And you can send us an email to Out of Ink.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode. Sorry, B's having a laughing bit. Sorry if it. I really hope if I edit out all the pauses, it's gonna be fine. If I didn't edit this heavily, it won't be fine. So just gonna have to edit it. So thank you for coping and bearing with our completely imperfect episode, the most imperfect episode there's ever been.
But that's so fitting. I love that.
Yeah, that's so true.
outofinkpodcast@gmail.com.
Could have been better though if this episode was perfect.
No such thing, Molly. No such thing.
Okay.
I have been monitoring our emails, so you'll get a reply.
Really?
Yeah.
I might email.
What are you gonna say?
Be better.
Oh.
B's been sending me pictures of quotes on plaques ever since last episode, which is quite fun.
I really enjoy now. Every time I go into a charity shop, and like, there'll always be one, always. There is no charity shop in the UK that doesn't have a great selection of Live, Laugh, Love signs.
If I had limitless time and money, I'd buy up like thousands of them and then come over to your house when you were out and plaster your walls. Or no, even better, all over the front of your house, get a ladder, get really high so you couldn't get them off.
Yeah. That would,
so then everyone would see them.
That would be money well spent. And like, I would find that very amusing. So please do that.
Okay. Well, you know, if I ever find myself at a loose end, I'll get going with that one.
If you ever reach perfectionism and you think, what next?
What next? That's such a good point, actually. Going back to the topic, if you did reach perfection, where'd you go?
Well, no.
You got nowhere to go.
This is the same thing about worrying, right? As soon as one worry disappears, another one pops up in its place. Always. Always, always, always. So you're never not worrying. You just move on.
Yeah, no, that's true. But then if you reach perfection, it's just boring then, isn't it? Like, life's about the imperfections.
Oh, and we should end it there. Life is about the imperfections. Beautiful.
Lovely.
Molly,
so
lemon.
Pleased. Make a wall plaque. Put it on a wall plaque.